And this morning we have Dr. Amin Banani, who will talk to us about the magic person of Kudus. Amin?
Society of necessity concentrate only on the saintly characteristics of the individual and leave everything else out. But we are just literalistic, you know, sort of objective type that we'd like to see what was the color of the eyes of the saint, and how many brothers and sisters did he have, did his mother love him, and so forth and so on. And these are types of information that are very hard to come by. And even if they do show up by chance, they may not tell us all that we like to know. All of this somewhat involved introduction, I think it's necessary for talking about any one of the early figures of the faith, and particularly about Pope Luke, because I don't like to raise the expectation of finding something about the flesh and blood of Pope Luke that you may not have known before this morning. And I assume that the intention of having this series here is not so much to indulge in a kind of gossipy approach to the lives of these early figures, but to see what we can learn about the circumstances of the foundation and the early formation of our faith, and the involvement of certain individuals in it, the type of situation, problem that they face, or they manifested, or somehow they brought to the shock holders by their involvement in it. In other words, certain basic and broader questions having to do with the tremendous historical fact of divine revelation, how it is received and how it grows. So this is going to be my approach, and if I were an artist, a playwright, a poet, I could do much better, take inspiration from the figures, as I understand it was done beautifully yesterday, and I couldn't hope to follow suit in that vein. So, in a way, we're going to look at some of the problems of the early days of the body movement via the personality and the involvement, the activities of Bordeaux. Second amount of biographical information I may just review, although it's readily available to all of us in the Dawnbreakers and in God Time to Spy. There may be one or two details which I've unconsciously gathered from other sources that you may not find in these, but basically it doesn't add up, as I say, too much to the personality and the account of the life of Bordeaux. One of the problems, by the way, I'm not telling you about the tradition of writing biographies in the Islamic culture, concentrating on the biography of the soul rather than of the person, is that somewhere along the line, we also face a kind of standardization of style, a kind of formulaic treatment of the individuals, so that the language used for conveying this information tends almost to obscure rather than cast into sharper focus the lives of these individuals, because a strain of takes several readings and a great deal of corroboration to extract the individuality of a person out of this, what I would call, miasmic style, which was more or less, let's say, the language of communication at the time. But you all know that Wadud was the youngest of the letters of the living. He was 22 back when he met the Baal and became the 18th and the last of the letters of the living. So this is one objective fact. We also know that he was born in the north of Persia in a town known as Baal Furud. It's changed name now, but it's still there. In a family of a lowly mullah, that is a religious personage, who was however not of a higher rank, but he was orphaned before he was 10 years old, and not much after that, first his mother married again, and not long after that, his mother also died, and so the better part of adolescence, early childhood, Qutus grew up with step parents. Now, generally speaking, part of the cliché of a society, the culture to which Qutus belong, is that the stepmothers are older, evil individuals who somehow always show favoritism to their own children and mistreat the stepchildren. And so the accounts of the personal childhood of Qutus all make mention of the fact that his stepmother was a peculiar exception to this cultural norm, was extremely fond of Qutus, and much more so apparently than of her own other children. And some of the touching little vignettes that have been recorded is that very often she expressed to him the desire of seeing him a bridegroom, witnessing his wedding, and he made cryptic remark that his wedding would not take place in the house, but it would take place out in the open, in the Meydan of Baal Furud, by the way. So I'm casting a bit of forward glance. You know, the martyrdom of Qutus took place in the Meydan of Baal Furud. He was martyred in his own hometown. And please remember that the time has not come yet. There will come a day when I will be married, but not in the normal fashion, in the open, but I will join my beloved. And later on, when in fact he was martyred in the Sabbath of Meydan of Baal Furud, the stepmother is to have made reminiscent of the remark that this is what he must have meant. I remember that part of the stories that were told and apparently impressed and was remembered. Not only was he the youngest of the letters of the living, but prior to the declaration of Bob, or prior to the discovery of the Bob by Qutus, he, along with a number of other young, enthusiastic members of the Shaykhi, of the Shaykhi sect, who were traveling from various parts of Persia to the holy cities of Najaf and Karbala to be present at the lectures of Sheikh Ahmad Asghari and Sheikh Qasim Rashid. He happened to be also the youngest disciple, pupil of Sheikh Qasim. And he is remembered from the sessions of Sheikh Qasim lecture as the very humble youth who invariably came, and apparently classrooms in those days were not too different from classrooms nowadays, that is, the attitudes of students in classrooms were not too different, and generally, and there was a commotion at the beginning of each hour for these students to jockey for position and move to the front of the room and get closer to the master. And for this show, totally, I think unexpected, if you like, contrary behavior, by making a point of sitting at the bedside, never pushing myself forward, and never remaining always silent. So much so that he apparently earned the ridicule of the rest of the pupils, and they thought that he then didn't have much to offer, that's why he was prudently silent. And they even went so far as making remarks to say, cousin, why do you waste your time? Why do you allow just anybody to come in to your presence? And say, cousin, is to make references by quoting passages from the Quran and various other traditions to reverence for the youngest and the most silent among you, who may know more than all the rest of you. And indeed, this is a characteristic that Qutus apparently had of giving initially the impression of almost total insignificance. He was small of stature, and he was somewhat, from all accounts, odd in his appearance, in that he did not wear the normal garb of the disciple. This is the remark that the various historians and the eyewitnesses have made, that the initial appearance of Qutus invariably was a kind of obstacle for the people to take it seriously. And this is a young man who, without making any serious impression at all on his fellow disciples, was in the classes of Sheikh Qasim, left with the other pupils after the death of the master and scattered throughout Persia with this sense of great imminence, the approach of the appearance of the Qur'an. And, as you know again from the Dawnbreaker, it took a number of weeks, apparently close to 2 months, while one by one, in mysterious ways, the letters of the living found the ball, and yet the ball still restrained them all from saying anything to anyone else until the last would also, in this fashion, find him without any external aid. And that fascinating episode is recorded in the Dawnbreaker, how one day the Bab and the Lord saying were walking in the streets of Shiraz when suddenly their Mullah Singh saw the person of Qutus and recognized him, of course, as fellow disciple of Sheikh Qasim, one of the friends who had scattered in Persia and were looking. And obviously Qutus had just arrived in the city, hadn't even had time to go to the Qasim Sarai and watch the dirty clothes for him. Furthermore, and to the oddness of the appearance, he seemed in a state of mental and spiritual agitation as well, and he quickly drew Mullah Hussain aside, and without waiting for Mullah Hussain to say anything to him, he started rebuking him for having kept secret from him the fact that the discovery had been made. And curiously enough, now you have to put yourself on the spot, two friends looking for the same thing, the all-important thing in their lives, and one has found it, and the other is convinced that the other has found it. And yet, Mullah said, it's curiously, conventional and sensible under these circumstances. He said, well, not now, why don't we go into the column, so I said, get cleaned up, I can't. I'm telling you, I know there he is, I see him, don't keep it from me, and Mullah Hussain still doesn't break down. Somehow the contrast of the two individuals right there, one obviously operating on a different level of what might be called psychic consciousness than the other. And this is a key to the personality of Bodhus, and it is a key which we can use only partially to unlock the personality, and the rest of it, I'm afraid, is not as comprehensible or as openable as all that, because you have to really take into account the centuries of evolution of a particular frame of mind combined with the individual chemistry of personality of Bodhus in order to appreciate the levels of cognition or consciousness which he operated, which in so many ways are so removed and so almost, I might say, alien to what we might consider normal human behavior. A kind of outlook on life which made a great placed a great emphasis on the hermetic, the secret spiritual communion with God, with a kind of almost cipher language which this communion took place, in a great significance of dreams, of signs, of interpretation, of prophecies, what might be called extra rational modes and realms of understanding consciousness and cognition and thought, which, by the way, is more or less the background into which the whole body revelation is born, but somehow the personal Bodhus symbolizes and typifies these qualities perhaps more than any of the rest. And it is this preparation plus this personality that made Bodhus so sure of the fact that Mullah Hussain had made the discovery. And so, when Mullah Hussain is still trying to preserve outward calm and sort of avoid a scene in the street, sort of pulled Bob aside and told him, well, he says, I can't hold him back, and then he knows who he is. The Bob said, yes, he's telling the truth, for we have already met. And how we are to take this, we have already met. course, is one of the interesting questions. If you want to be very prosaic and literalistic, I said yes, might be a chance. And Obama also visited their cousin in Kabbalah, but obviously that is not how God meant it, and that is not how the Lord Saint understood it, and certainly that is not how Obama stated his position, and how successfully we can take this state of affairs, this condition of certainty that is not based on any objective factual phenomenon, how successfully we can comprehend it, is it up to us, and that is the level at which they were operating. But the meeting took place for the age of 22, was appointed as the 18th and last of the letters of the living, and then the dispersion of the letters immediately followed. And the dispersion of the letters did not follow immediately after the recognition of Qudus. They remained a while in Shiraz, and Mullah Hussein first traveled away with the rest, and Qudus remained with the Bab. And this is an interesting fact right away. The individual outwardly the least of the letters of the living. The youngest and by reputation the least significant. Somehow imperceptibly and as Fred pointed out, perhaps magically, from the beginning moved easily and naturally into a position of greater proximity and trust with the person of the ball, so that in a matter of few months after this, when the decision to make a pilgrimage to Mecca and make an open proclamation of his mission was taken by the Bab, according to the accounts, the only one of the disciples who followed the Bab on this pilgrimage was Qudus. And we have accounts of the companionship of the two on this voyage, how the Bab was engaged in a very difficult voyage and sailboat, I think Garcia Garantia, I'm sure that episode in the Nabi's narrative has particular meaning for them. Where the Bab and the play for improvement on the mode of sea travel board. But the fact remains that Qudus became apparently almost an inseparable adjunct of the evolving, the outpouring revelation of the Bab. He would speak and the Qudus would write it down. A portion of the Persian Bayan apparently was written down in the hands of Qudus, and this is how it has survived. So this is how close and how significant the relation of the two together was. And upon the return from this pilgrimage, Qudus left Shiraz after a terrible episode of public denunciation and humiliation, where his beard was burned and he was tied with his hands behind his back and ridden on a donkey backwards. All sorts of ridicule were heaped upon him, and with another one of the 11 who was living, paraded through the city of Shiraz after this humiliation, left and originally went to the city of Kerman, and from there, on the periphery of the great salt desert in Persia, he made his which was his home region, and from there on to Baghdad. Now, on this trip from Kerman to Tehran and then to Mazandaran, we have vignettes recorded, the memories of visits of Qudus to various towns and villages along the way. And here one might shed a little bit of light on a passage in Baha'i history, meaning the letters that were dealing with this book, and they went about and they raised the call of the Baal publicly, and they created a veritable revolution. And yes, these are all in generalities, and not too much detail of how they went about and how they brought about this kind of this proclamation, this public proclamation is available to us. I happened to visit last summer one of these small towns on the periphery of the desert, the small town of Abdistan, it is recorded in the Dawn Breaker, where Qudus visited, and he was the first to bring the message of the Baal and to more or less create what in modern Baha'i jargon we would call mass conversion. So although this is a little removed from the person of the Qudus, yet this is the role that he has played in the history and the seed that he planted. And I might tell you of what I saw in this little town, where of a population of close to 2,000, about 750 are Baha'is. One whole quarter of the town are Baha'is. And furthermore, they have been Baha'is almost en masse ever since that visit of Qudus. What the numbers were originally, obviously, and population has grown now, but they took place, a mass conversion, as a result of the visit of Qudus. And heroic deeds transpired right at the beginning, the attack of the rest of the townsmen on this particular quarter, and the heroism and the perseverance of these then Babis and later Baha'i, that more or less has repeated itself down to our own time. As late as 1954, the rest of the population of this town once more attacked this Baha'i sector and burned their Hadhrat al-Qudus, their Baha'i center, and wrecked their baths and various other edifices, and upturned the graves, and did all sorts of desecration on them. And yet, they persevered, and the contrast that exists between this Baha'i section with the rest of the town, as well as with the rest of similar towns all over, one of the greatest confirmations of the truth and the validity and the efficacy of this faith, because there you see the midst of squalor, disease, illiteracy, all kinds of degradation and backwardness, almost a wonderful embryo of Baha'i community, which by now has roots of 5, 6, 7 generations, where Baha'i classes, persons practically no illiteracy, the kids from a young age attending daily Baha'i schools, and the memory of Qudus passed on in this fashion, more or less, as the father of the faith in this community. It gives you a sense of contact with these figures. So, in a sense, I thought I would bring this episode in to point out that everything that is significant and relevant about Qudus is not simply and purely historical at all. Well, from precipitated by the return of Mullah Hussain from a visit to the Bomb by this time, was imprisoned at Mahkum. This would have been probably the most important landmark in the development of Bobby movement, if not in the development of the Bobby revelation in Persia. A kind of spontaneous, almost at first seemingly purposeless gathering of the leaders of the Bobby community in this village, Badakh, were apparently, once they gathered, they quickly somehow worked out two items for deliberation and consultation. Furthermore, two items which were being deliberated and consulted simultaneously at two levels. One was participation of all the Bobbies who had gathered at Badakh, and another one more or less limited to a smaller circle of the recognized leaders of the community, including Qudus and Mullah Hussain and Tahir and Baha'u'llah and several others. And the third topic that was generally discussed at what might be called a plenary session in Badakh was the immediate and burning question of rescuing the person of the Baal from Maku. This was uppermost in the mind of most Baalis. But here we are, a headless community. We are cut off from our source of inspiration and direction. And what are we going to do about it? And decision was reached and unanimously agreed upon that they would quickly go away from Badakh in various directions, allow other bodies to arm themselves and to go to Mahu and take position around the border, and from there address the Shah peacefully to release the Baal or else. That is, if the Shah heeded their demand for the release of the Baal, so much the better. And if not, they would be prepared to forcibly attack the fortress and overrun and rescue the Baal. And this was the decision taken, but it was very clear that while this more obvious question was being discussed, that the question which primarily pushed by the person of Tahir at Badakh and which occupied the attention, consultation of the leaders in a very significant and dramatic way was the question of the implication of manifestation of the Baal, or specifically the implication of that manifestation insofar as the observance of the ritual, the law of Islam is concerned, how binding it remained on the Bobby community. In a sense, although the question was posed at first in a very pragmatic and concrete way, in a way that immediately touched all of them, but what do we do? Do we, for example, keep the fast for 30 days in Ramadan or not? Or do we make ablutions in this form or not? But basically, as you can see, it's the all-important question of what is the implication of the new manifestation? Is it the termination of the law of Muhammad or not? And understandably, the person of power, I say understandably, and not trying to get into the reasons why it's understandable, person of Tahir was the foremost spokesman for what might be called the revolutionary wing at Badakh, the ones who the new manifestation is a full one, and it requires the abrogation of the ritual law of Islam. And by all accounts, for those who himself have had, you might say, this complex personality of being different from most everyone else. On this question of purity and piety, took what might be called the conservative position and insisted that this was beyond the intent of the manifestation, and certainly it would lead to a complete derangement of the body community. There are then, from this moment on, to this basic polarization of two views between power and produce, accounts in history that produce was much more concerned with preservation of the unity of the Babi community, and Pahare was for the purging of this community. Let everyone who is weak-kneed and who doesn't understand, let them ask. We don't want them, that if they want to object, let them go. And Qudus wanted to preserve the unity of the group. And there are accounts, apparently, he was not all that opposed to the basic position of Tahere. It's really hard to pass any judgment on this issue. The fact remains that in any situation like this, and you have been told in consultative bodies, that when an active dynamic revolutionary position is taken by one side, it somehow pushes the opposition into a corner where they either accept or move out, and Qudus was not about to move out. And it took the alchemy of the person of Baha'u'llah to produce not a faith-saving reconciliation, but a true reconciliation after Badr, and he did so in a way that was readily understandable and acceptable by all of them, by referring to the authority of the Quran and by producing an interpretation of relevant passages in the Quran which shed light on the significance of a new manifestation and what it means in terms of the abrogating of the laws of the past. And this more or less became the generally agreed and understood position and policy of the body, that the laws of Islam were abrogated. Now this of course raises an interesting question, and this is why at the beginning I pointed out that it isn't so much the personal details, but the role played by these individuals in basic problem revelations that are important. And as I see this conference at Badr and the role of Qudus in it, I can only come to the conclusion that even the of revelation of God, the moment it enters into the realm of human understanding, becomes not a kind of simple, final, and forthright development that we might originally imagine, there is Bob, and he is absolutely unaware of his future position as a manifestation of God, and one day the message of God comes to him and it's all clear exactly what he's going to do and how things are going to develop from there on. And everyone that he speaks to from then on, that is everyone who believes in him, also accept his claim in this same simple, forthright, complete and final way. Yes, you're absolutely right, this is what it means, and here we go. If we have this kind of understanding of the beginnings of the history of our faith, we might look at the presence of Bruce and his involvement, as well as the other historic figures and their relationship with the Bob, and draw certain lessons. Or we might do something considerably easier and closer to home, that is, go back to the process of our own discovery of the faith and our own growing understanding of the faith. It may be perfectly true that that moment of illumination, that moment when something happened within us, we decided that this was true, was a very definite moment. And that feeling cast a tremendous, shadow, as well, this is a wrong imagery for what I'm trying to say, a tremendous illumination on our understanding at that moment. Yes, realize that from there on, process of growth in the faith, understanding of revelation of God, was an ever-developing process in our own consciousness. What I'm trying to say is that it appears from a study of early Bobby history, and particularly of the person, the complex person of Bordeaux, that divine revelation, as soon as it involves human channels, becomes a developing phenomenon. The understanding even of the manifestation himself, much more so the understanding of those who are convinced by the validity and the truth of that manifestation, is an ever-developing, ever-growing phenomenon, and that development is part and parcel of Baha'i history. Now, what faith does, the initial faith of the early Babi, such as Qutus, or Al-Qam, is more or less to guide ourselves in the decisions that we take, the fork in the road that we reach, and the decisions that we make. Decide that the course, the main course of the development of the faith, is the intended course, the divinely intended course for the development of that faith. Beyond that, that intention was not all that clear and all that understood by everyone at the earliest time, including the person of the Bob himself. And this is why there is a kind of reciprocity between the letters of the living, including Qutus, and the Bob, facing certain basic issues which then help usher in the next significant stage in the full unfolding with certain hard and seemingly irreconcilable facts otherwise. Now, I didn't want to take up the whole time amount that I have, but there are a few minutes for questions. The life of Bodhu after Badash was very short. From there to Tabati, and at the fortress of Tabati, we have a picture of this dual leadership where Mullah Hussain is obviously the fighter and the inspirer of the opposition, primarily inspired them with fear and keep them back. And Mozu is the builder of the body, 313 body of the body in the fortress. The account of his behavior, of his during the nearly 6 months period of siege in the fortress, that add on to this complex personality. Sometimes he seems to be taking decisions which seem to be removed from the immediate reality and the task at hand. For example, there's a number of the 313, a number of artisans, smiths and carpenters and what have you, who are busy building fortifications and preparing themselves for defense, and yet for Bruce take a good deal of their time, better than half of their time, in what might be called ideological indoctrination. What did they need this at the time? Wouldn't it be better if they had more bullets rather than spend time in this kind of deepening, spiritual deepening that Bodhu was giving them? And yet, it is precisely that spiritual deepening which enabled the body to last for 5.5 months that they did, good 4 months of it without the person of Mullah Hussain, because he was killed after the first 2 months of the siege, and enabled them really to distinguish themselves from a band of fanatical outcasts or rebels against the authority of the Shah, and really inspire not only their opposition, but the Babis who heard the account of Tabati for the significant, meaningful, tragic event of Tabati, which was almost kind of replica of the martyrdom of Hussein on Karbala. Kind of focal issue where evil is distinguished from good, where justice is distinguished from injustice. Somehow he managed to form a truly purposeful group out of the Babis so that they behave. For initially we know, for example, some of the night raids that the Babis would make, they would stay behind to gather the loot of the government troops that they had put to flight, and by the end every single one of them is acting like a saint. And this was really whereby the significance of Tabati then becomes much more than just a group of people cornered and beaten down, and it becomes the heroic spiritual chapter that it is in